EAA board member Charlie Precourt has several irons in the fire of things that are of interest at EAA and to its membership. Charlie, thanks for coming by for what's turning out to be an annual conversation.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Mike. Great to see you again.
So one of the things that's happening this week is that you're staying pretty close to the Apollo astronauts who are being honored. I've seen you sort of with the entourage today. Tell me about how that's going.
It's going wonderful. And the show, many of them have been here before, and they notice the show is getting more and more interesting and broader in variety and exciting, and they're just thrilled to have a chance to be with us. You know, I'm not sure how many more years we can get that many of them together, right? So last night at the gala, the Young Eagles dinner, they were all there, and it was wonderful. And tonight they'll be in the theater in the woods.
Did your career as an astronaut overlap any of the Apollo folks?
Yes. Most significantly, John Young, who, of course, flew on Gemini and then twice on Gemini, twice on Apollo, including landing on the moon, and then twice on shuttle, including the first shuttle flight. John was one of the more prolific of the astronauts. And he was the chief of the astronaut corps just before I arrived, and then he stayed on as a senior technical assistant to the center director in Houston. And he and I would do simulator sessions in the shuttle late in the evenings to prove out the application of new technologies and new trajectories, and managing the shuttle in the event of, in particular, ascent problems when we would hypothetically lose an engine. How can you get safely to a runway somewhere in the world? And he and I spent many an hour after hours in the sim until midnight trying to figure that stuff out.
And Gene Kranz, who is here this week also, continued as a controller into the shuttle era as well, right?
He did, right into the very beginning, and then handed it off. Yep, exactly. You know, we have Joe Engel, who is here. He made that transition overlap as well. Joe, of course, came from the X-15, and he's here visiting with the Apollo guys. You know, just a great crowd that we got here this year. Frank Borman and Jim Lovell, wonderful people.
So where did you see the greatest value in that continuity and in the ability of those people in Gemini and Apollo to plug into the shuttle program?
Well, so it really came, in my experience, I flew three docking missions to the Russian space station Mir, which was obviously our predecessor project for today's International Space Station. And, you know, none of us had docked a shuttle to anything until that program came along. And John Young in particular being there to work a lot of those processes and procedures. And I was pilot of the first docking mission with Hoot Gibson as the commander. And, you know, it's one of those things where there's a maneuver you're being trained to do, and simulators are really good, but until you get to the real thing, you're never quite sure what is not quite there in the simulator that you're going to be surprised about in flight. So having that kind of experience where they had done all of that in Apollo, actually Gemini was where we did our first docking missions, getting into Apollo and seeing how that got put to use every single flight for them, that was very significant to hand over those lessons.
Let's switch gears and talk about another event that happened this week. You're one of the spearheads of the Founders Innovation Prize. Second annual runoff was this week. You were one of the judges. It was very surprising that a group consisting of three high school students were the winners. What did you think about that?
I thought it was pretty inspiring. The three young men that were incredibly poised could carry questions on the fly to a logical conclusion and give us a good answer. You know, stepping back and you think about this, the Founders Innovation Prize, you get the first word's founder. And Paul Poberesny, when I first started to become involved with the board, would continually come to me and say, we really need help on our amateur-built aircraft community's safety record. Knowing that I was a test pilot, he wanted to tap into that. And so joining the safety committee here at EAA, we've focused on a number of things, like the additional pilot program and now the Founders Innovation Prize, to understand that the innovation that comes from our community can in fact answer the problem. Loss of control in flight is a significant issue. We have a fatality on the average of once a week. The NTSB pointed that out to us really directly in about 2011, and we've been doing a number of things to make that trend come down, and we're seeing some good progress, but we got a long way to go. And to see these innovative ideas come forward in the Theater in the Woods each year, with kind of a build-up over the months leading up to it, where teams come forward and individuals bring their ideas to the stage, you know, I think it opens the eyes of a lot of folks now to have a young team like that actually win it. I think it's going to get a lot more people interested in joining the cause. I'm looking forward next year to flipping around the rules a little bit, not necessarily changing the rules, but, you know, you think about the interchange the judges have. I asked them, the three young men, a question, and they had to think on their feet. And I think it'll be more revealing of the depth and maturity of their ideas if we could have more time for questions with them as judges and kind of interact and bounce them around a little bit and see what's really in there. And I think I'm going to propose that we do 5 minutes of presentation and 10 minutes of questions.
Instead of the other way around.
Uh-huh. Right. And maybe even put out on a website a community place for them all to go and share their ideas to the degree that they want to. I mean, these are their own intellectual property, and many of them may not want to, but what I'd like to see them doing is in the community figuring out, I could team with that guy and or that gal, and we'd have an even better idea. And so we're going to keep making this contest better every year.
We're talking with Charlie Precourt, who's a member of EAA's Board of Directors and has many irons in the fire and a number of things of interest to EAA members. NASA has an enormous presence here this week with a lot of facets to the things that they're doing, both in space and in aeronautics as well. And then you wear a hat also as an executive from ATK, a mm-hmm. key supplier to the Space Launch System. So mm-hmm. what kinds of things are you all talking about and questions hearing about this week?
Yeah, this is an audience with 500,000 people here at Oshkosh that are very tech savvy. And from my standpoint, it's, you know, the word aerospace as aeronautics and space in one word. And the human spaceflight element that I come from got its roots in aviation. All of the NASA astronauts through Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, and Shuttle. You know, we expanded into mission specialists in Shuttle, and there were some scientists, astronauts before that, but by and large, the folks at the controls were military test pilots, had roots in aviation, and at Oshkosh, we've always seen NASA's connection to that. So as a company, there's a lot of reasons that it makes sense for us to be here. That this kind of audience, especially with Gateway Park and the universities that are over there, they represent our future workforce. So we give them a flavor of that. It's also a way just to speak to the public about where the space program's going. And NASA's into, with human spaceflight, looking at the retirement of the space station in the mid-20s. And we are already, as an industry, building the vehicles that will take us to Mars. And we are building a system, SLS, the Space Launch System, the biggest rocket to ever fly as a first flight scheduled in about 2 years, that is, will be more powerful than Apollo, and it will be capable of taking us back to the moon. We plan a Gateway, which is a small stationary or station kind of outpost in an orbit about the moon, from which we can assemble and amass a convoy to go to Mars, or we can descend from there to the surface of the moon. All with the idea that we make this sustainable for the long haul. And I think about, in describing what sustainable means, McMurdo Station on Antarctica, for example, where we do continuous research. Think about that kind of a station on the surface of the moon and eventually on the surface of Mars. And our membership is all excited about that kind of thing, right? Americans in general are. So our companies come here and give a good progress report on that. We partner with NASA in their pavilion to let the public see just what we're doing. So there's the educational element, there's the future workforce element. There's also the idea that the innovation that's around here, you know, sparks the imagination in connecting aviation to space and the spin-off technologies that we all share. So there's a lot of good for us to be here and making those connections. So we have Lockheed Martin Boeing, Orbital ATK, Aerojet Rocketdyne, and Jacobs Engineering, the five companies that are planning this Mars initiative for NASA, all here this week together.
So I'm sure each one of them is working on a slightly different schedule, but can you talk about where the big pieces of the SLS are in Orion in terms of their development?
Absolutely. So there are three major elements for the mission to Mars that we're currently under project progress right now is very strong. We are building flight hardware for the first flight. Orion, as a capsule, flew unmanned in the end of 2014 with a multiple orbit flight and a reentry to prove out its capabilities. And then the first flight of the big rocket at the end of 2019, about 2 years from now, we'll have the Orion and the big rocket together. And that will go on a deep retrograde, what we call a deep retrograde orbit around the moon. Think of Apollo 8 when they circled the moon and then came back. We're going to do that on the first flight of this rocket. And so we are building the big boosters that are, all of the first flight boosters have been completed and they're ready for shipment to Kennedy to start processing to stack the vehicle. The main engines are also under testing right now in pre-shipment phase to go to Kennedy. The big tank that is in the middle is being welded up at this point in time. The Orion and the Europeans are contributing what we call a service module. The solar arrays and the engine on the back end of the Orion are coming from Europe. That's all under construction. So lots of things will start converging at Kennedy Space Center starting next spring. And then a year following that, we'll be ready to start getting it on the pad to fly. So it's an immense program. It's touching suppliers and companies all over the country. Wisconsin has many companies here that are involved. Matter of fact, you may have noticed that Jim Lovell and Governor Walker did an op-ed together where they talked about the history in Wisconsin of participation in Apollo and carrying forward now today into the SLS and Orion program. So we have at least a half a dozen contractors here in Wisconsin that participate in the program, doing all kinds of metalwork and cabling, electronics, and a variety of things that are all really, really beneficial to what this program does. Really, when you think about it, is it raises the bar on the technical demands of our industry to make them better, make them more efficient, make them more cost effective, make them better businesses. And it's just great for all of us.
That's Charlie Precourt, the member of EAA's board of directors, a former shuttle astronaut, and a specialist on many, many things, aeronautical and astronautical, talking about what's ahead in space and what's ahead for EAA as well. Charlie, thanks.
Hey, my pleasure, Mike.
You're listening to EAA Radio.